Today is April 5th, 2017, and this is episode number 405 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, and I am counting down the days one by one, looking for tomorrow. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com.
Yeah. I'm glad we specify anything about the show, because if we didn't do that, someone would find the loophole and they would send us messages wanting us to do their math homework.
They would be sorely disappointed if that's what they did.
Yeah.
I don't think they want us doing their math homework.
No, probably not. It's obvious though. I mean, when you have two electric trains coming at each other, one's doing 50 miles an hour and the other's doing 40 miles an hour, but the wind is blowing at 7 miles an hour. Which direction does the smoke go? Get off the train. There are two trains coming at each other. Get off the train. That's the answer.
That's the answer. Yeah. 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 How'd you do on your SATs?
Get off the train.
All right. Well, speaking of SATs, Apple has said that they're going to make a new Mac Pro.
So they have said. And it's interesting because the whole thing surrounding this is completely out of character for Apple.
Instead of saying completely out of character, let's call it unprecedented.
All right. It's unprecedented.
You know what I mean?
It's definitely unprecedented. And in that sense, it's not something they've done before, hence unprecedented, which also would be out of character.
Yeah, all right, fair enough. My mostly pedantic side likes unprecedented better than out of character.
Well, I like the colorful symbolism.
Okay, let's talk about the real issue, which is the fact that Apple said it's going to release, it's going to make a new Mac Pro. They slightly updated the existing Mac Pro.
Right.
Made it slightly less offensive, actually dropped the price down a little bit.
And the cores in the CPUs, they bumped those up, meaning they added more. They didn't put significantly newer processors in, though. So the four cores now 6, the 6 cores now 8. And then the GPUs, the dual GPUs, they kind of slid down the line. So
but they bloody well bumped the price back up too. Like a couple of weeks ago, the price for the 4-core one was down to like $26.99, $27.99,
and now it's back up.
And now it's back up to that $29.99 price where it was introduced.
Wow, they added more cores in, Brian.
Yeah, great. Yay. And at least it still starts with 256 gigs of storage for $3,000 frickin'. Oh my God. Like, yeah, because, that's what a pro machine needs. A pro machine needs a quarter of a terabyte.
Well, when you say it that way,
that's really pro.
Terabyte. Pro. You said terabyte. Pro.
Really pro.
Terabyte. No, the storage is way too low on that thing. The problem with that computer is the problem that it's always had. It was engineered completely wrong, meaning it was engineered for aesthetics and not for the broader professional market.
Yeah, it wasn't engineered for professional needs. It was instead, as you said, engineered for aesthetics. And to be fair, the aesthetics are gorgeous.
I agree. Yeah.
Right. Absolutely gorgeous. I mean, I love that machine. I love that machine with the case off. I mean, I love it with the case on. I love it with the case off. I love the fact that it's fanless, although Apple admitted to the five journals that they brought in for this pseudo announcement. And said that they screwed up on the thermals.
Yeah, that's the closest I think ever Apple has ever come to saying, wow, we really blew it on this design.
Right. But I mean, but you know, it looks good. It's just, it wasn't engineered for professional needs. And it's like the, you know, it was like the Cube 2 only with more cylinder.
I'm going to get a little bit mostly pedantic on you. It's actually a really fantastic machine for some pro users.
Okay, that's probably not pedantic. Now, I say that because I am mostly pedantic, but fine. It's a fine correction. For some pros, it is a fine machine, but for a lot of pros, it is not. I would even say for most pros, it's not.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that. For most pros, this is not the right Mac Pro.
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
But we do have this new one coming, and it's not going to be coming for another year. And it does, you know, we talked about this a little bit on TDO a couple of days ago. Mm-hmm. We'll have a note, a link to that in the show notes. It's hard for me to grasp how we got here, like why it was necessary for Apple to say that we're going to be fixing this in a year or more, maybe a year and a half, and we don't know, sometime next year, right? What they said is it won't be this year.
Right. So we're assuming it's next year.
Yeah. It could be
the year.
2 years from now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And all right. So what I'm wondering, Brian, is what has been going on inside Apple that would let them go this long before deciding that they need to do something about the Mac Pro?
Yeah, exactly. Like, I mean, like they wake up 3 years later and go, oh crap, we forgot about the Mac Pro that we've been selling this whole time.
Yeah. I mean, I would like to think that within 6 months of the Mac Pro going on sale, there were people inside the company saying, okay, we need to start watching really closely to see what's going on here because we're not seeing the sales we expect. And or maybe right. They were at that point. I don't know. But within a year, I'm assuming that they would have been looking at what they had and talking about what they could do for upgrades for the machine and realizing they had a serious problem.
Yeah, you would think so, right? I mean, you would think so. I mean, what seems likely is that those people were just assigned to other tasks. Right? And we heard, of course, Mark Gurman wrote that excellent piece, detailing how there were some key departures, but you know, like why was that allowed? Why was that allowed to happen? And then why was it not corrected immediately? And you know, why would it take, like, I get the impression, I don't know. I wasn't one of the five journos that was invited to go see this, but I get the impression that this is something that they may have been working on for like the last three to six months.
Yeah,
or maybe even a year.
Yeah, the impression that I'm getting is that what they were talking about at the special meeting with the five journalists was new, and by new, I mean something that they've been working on for months as opposed to years.
Right, and that is. That is Mr. By the way, Bob Levitis's birthday was yesterday.
So is he old enough to drive? Finally?
Yes. Well, yes, he's finally going to be able to get his driver's license. Well
then, happy birthday, Bob.
You know, while I'm taking on this massive tangent, did you know that Vern Seward is joining the Peace Corps?
Yeah. No, wait. Wait, what, Brian? Vern's joining the Peace Corps? Tell me about that.
Yeah, he's joining the Peace Corps.
That's really cool.
And he's going off to Namibia, and he leaves later this month. Vern, those who may need a refresher or maybe didn't know, Vern wrote for us for many, many years. He used to find this really cool apps. He gave us some great photography tips. He's just a natural storyteller. Love the man to death, and he's joining the Peace Corps, and in his retirement, I might add, right? He's not doing this after he graduates from college. He's doing this in his retirement. I just so admire him.
Yeah, I think that's really cool. Vern is awesome.
I'm telling Bob that we gave him a shout out on the show.
Oh, cool.
So anyway, there's our unrelated tangents there. How this was allowed to get to this point, the fact that this really does feel like it was something that they started working on recently. I don't want to just be cranky butt Brian.
I think that's a very noble goal.
I'm not there, but I don't want to, you know, this is my goal in life. I mean, and I'm excited that Apple is finally doing something. I'm excited we got at least some kind of upgrade on the existing trash can, right? That they're not still selling the exact same product that they were selling 3.5 years ago. I'm at 3 years and 4 months ago, because it shipped 6 months after bloody well was announced. So, I'm glad that we're seeing some change, and I'm glad to see Apple realizing that what John Keat was saying all along. This is one of those areas where John Keat was ahead of me, and that Apple realizes that it is in fact losing professional customers. That that they needed to do something to stem that tide.
Mm-hmm. And there are plenty of other companies out there that have been more than happy to take advantage of the state of the Mac Pro.
Yeah.
I mean, HP, as an example, they saw the technological deficit in Apple's product lineup with the state of the Mac Pro, mm-hmm. and consciously chose to create computers designed to entice Mac Pro users into HP computers.
Hey, Bob wants to be a guest on the show and talk about his new book. Can we do that next week?
Yeah, we can do that.
Sausage, folks. Sausage making right here.
Yeah. No, see, when people get to experience that sort of thing happening, it's cool, because then it's like getting to be in the studio with us.
Yes. Let's go with that.
Yeah. All right. We'll go with that.
Let's see here. Where were we? Apple. I know we had a thought. What were we talking about? John. Yeah. Apple recognizing the fact that they're losing these pro customers, and that they're doing something about it rather than just keeping to staying in character and not saying a darn thing until they were ready to change. Right. That to your earlier point about it being unprecedented or out of character. Right. Apple has made this proactive effort to stem this problem. And I would love to just latch onto that and be excited. I would love for that to be my sole focus, but what the hell was Apple doing? I can't just let that go. What the frack was Apple doing all of this time? Why is it necessary for us to be doing this today?
It's baffling. And all I can figure is that Chaffin's razor is coming into play, And there's some critical piece of information that if we knew this massive time frame between releasing the Mac Pro and now, would all make sense. Or at least I hope it would make sense. Because if it's just something where Apple completely dropped the ball on this computer for essentially 3 years, that's bad.
Okay, and it gets even more interesting, man, because they also said that they're going to be doing a new display.
Yeah.
Now, y'all talked about that. Y'all talked about that. You and Kelly and John Martellaro talked about that this morning on TDO. Is that right?
Yes, we did.
What did y'all say? I haven't listened to the show. Give me the short version.
Okay, the short version is, I think that Apple realized that that trusting some other company to make the companion product for their computers, the display, was a bad idea because they didn't get what they wanted. And Apple ended up looking bad for it. And what I'm referring to is the LG.
LG, right. LG 5K display. Which was, you know, inexpensive, and you got what you pay for. So, all right, that's fine. Yeah, and that's probably the case. But again, how did that happen? And Apple, we already know that Apple reassigned its display people.
Yeah. All right, I have a hypothesis on that.
Okay, do tell. I'd love to hear it.
Okay, so my hypothesis is that Apple decided at some point, based on looking at all the numbers and all the market stuff, that displays was not a space that they needed to be in, and that their resources were better spent focusing on the actual computers. And
really? You're gonna tell me
now? Wait.
That
now wait. Now wait. And so they reassigned people to all these other products, which didn't work out very well at all, because everyone is freaking out about the Mac product line and the iPad and the Apple TV and just, you know, down the line. But I think that maybe what Apple did, and then as everything started playing out, they realized that they looked bad because they're promoting an LG display that doesn't even work right. And so they decided that they need to take control over that part of their product narrative again. And now they're getting back into displays now.
Okay. But go ahead.
This has me kind of concerned, because I'm trying to figure out where is the focus in the company if they're saying, oh, let's redistribute everyone. We're not going to make that. We're not actually accomplishing that much. Oh, crap. The display thing is a big problem. Well, we need to put people back on displays. I mean, from the outside, it looks like there is administrative turmoil in the company.
Yeah, and I would let's go with that. I would imagine that this is a direct product of the smallest executive team and technology for the world's most valuable company. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, Apple. So Apple's. We talked about this a couple of times here and there over the recent years. Apple's whole penchant for running like a startup, which was Steve Jobs' idea. His belief was that small development teams can get more done. Small development teams who are empowered to do things, who are empowered, truly empowered, can do more than a large development team, which needs significant oversight. And you have this small executive team that has hands-on decision making over you know, everything. And by not really expanding that executive team, I mean, Apple has added a few executives, but that inner circle that meets, I think, once a week has, to my knowledge, has stayed small. And that they just didn't have enough hours in the day to focus on all the things that they were wanting to focus on, including their legacy products like the Mac. And the thing is that we need Macs. Apple needs Macs. I think one of the points that they made to the journos that they brought in was that developers are some of their pro users. And Apple needs developers to make all those apps that make the App Store so successful, that make the iOS platform so successful. Apple's own developers. And this was always the thing that made me feel like Apple would not be abandoning the Mac. Apple's own developers need Macs to make iPhones.
Mm-hmm.
And to make cars.
And it's not like Apple's going to custom build computers for in-house use only.
That would be crazy. But they're also not going to use Windows like animals. I mean, that's not going to happen. And by the way, my cars thing was kind of a joke. I at this point, I don't think Apple is going to ever release a car, despite the fact that it was working on a car. Yeah. So I throw that out there. But you know, Apple does still have a team. Apple still has a team doing something with cars. I just don't feel like it's ever going to turn into a car at this point. But I'm thinking
what that team is doing is watching Cars.
Watching Cars?
The movie.
I like this. That's good stuff, brother. And Apple does have a team making doing something with AR, and that's AR for iPhones. That's an augmented reality for iPhones. But you know, they need Macs for these things. The designers need Macs. Mm-hmm. The marketing people need Macs. The people who are working on Apple's own commercials, they need Macs. So that was always my like, you know, I'm not really worried about the Mac. Because Apple itself needs them, and although clearly it got to the point where Apple was utterly neglecting this field too. So I think it does come down to that small development team. It does come down to focus. It does come down to, it's just hard to imagine. It is the Chaffin's razor is in full force here. It is impossible to fathom from the outside how no one noticed that the Mac was sucking, you know, and how they needed. You haven't heard this before. I had a drummer. I'm a guitarist, right? But I'm a guitarist who started my musical life off as a drummer. And the last thing I want to listen to is another guitar lick. Guitar licks bore the crap out of me. Mm-hmm. But what I love hearing really awesome drum beats. And one of the things I like to do on Instagram is listen to drummers who post like a beat of the day. There's a hashtag for beat of the day.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And, sometimes it'll be a beat going with some music, but a lot of times it's just the drum beat. And I still love drums. I have a drum set. I don't get to play it, anywhere near as much as I want to, which is like almost never. But, I like listening to drummers on Instagram and hearing really great beats. And one of the drummers that I follow reached out to me to ask me some questions about a Mac. And as we were talking in direct message on Instagram, he said, "Yeah, I just laid out money for this." This was a few days ago. Mm-hmm. And he gives me a link to a new Mac Pro. And I'm thinking, I sure wish you'd asked me before you bought that, man. I would have told you not to. And he's like, "Yeah, I've never, you know," but I didn't tell him that because he had just bought it. I didn't want to rain on his parade.
Sure.
He was so excited. He said, "I've never spent this much money on anything before." And I'm thinking, man, and you just spent that much money. You spent a meaningful amount of money to yourself for this legacy outdated technology. But the reality is that he was using a years old Mac Mini. So it is going to be an upgrade for him.
All right. Well, in that sense, yeah, that's a huge upgrade for him. But still, he just spent more money on a computer than I spend on my cars when I buy a car. To be fair, that's the same for me. But the point is, that's a lot of money, and he doesn't realize that he bought what amounts to 4-year-old technology.
Right. And that was, I think, the case for just about anyone that was buying that thing. And, you know, and these, you know what I'm going to do when we're done? I'm going to reach out to him. Actually, we have an Adobe press conference today, too. So maybe after that, I'm going to reach out to him and say, hey, man, if you haven't gotten that yet, cancel it. Reorder. And if you did get it, return it if you can. And reorder. Get the new one. You know, spend $300 extra and get something that's better.
Yeah. And
unless, of course, they actually didn't ship him the old one and they're going to ship him the new one instead.
Which would be.
But I don't think Apple will do that. I think they'll happily ship him the old one.
Sometimes they surprise people and ship them the new computers.
That's true.
Yeah.
There's a price difference, so I kind of doubt it. But one way or another.
If he's in his 14-day window, he's okay.
Right. He should, right. And I believe he is. So it's hard to believe. I guess we're left with a lot of unanswered questions. It's hard to understand how we got here, yet we are happy to see some progress, and we're happy that Apple realizes the severity of the situation that it would take this unprecedented or out of character move of telling us. I'm glad that Apple is re-entering the display market. Mm-hmm. I hope that they do something amazing there. It's probably going to be an 8K display. That would be my guess.
That would be really cool. But at the same time, I'm totally prepared for Apple to roll out a 5K display and immediately have people flipping out over the fact that it's 5K instead of 8K.
What I would actually love to see is Apple do a 5K and an 8K, like a 5K that is affordable. LOL.
Okay. That would be really cool. Give us a 5K and an 8K.
Yeah, that would be tremendous. That would be tremendous because, you know, by the time this thing ships, 5K will be, I mean, you should be able to get 5K displays that function for a few $100.
Yeah. Yeah, you probably can.
Right. And an 8K display should at least be, I mean, Dell's already announced an 8K display.
Right. And it wouldn't surprise me if HP has one coming
by then. Yeah, for sure.
LG.
For sure.
So. LG.
Well, LG will figure it out.
Yeah, you just don't want to have it near any wireless devices.
Well, no, they'll figure that out too.
Yeah, they're just going to pop them open and wrap them in tin foil and cases back on. What could possibly go wrong?
They will fix this.
It won't stop me from ridiculing them.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. They should have known. And Apple should have known, man. What? It's just so weird. All right. Anyway, we still have unanswered questions. That's all there is to it.
We have a lot of unanswered questions. Yeah. But we do know that there's an iMac with Pro user features coming later this year
an updated iMac would be nice. Again, why we're having to wait so long. I want Apple to get back in that mind frame of updating computers every year.
Yeah, and there's also the Mac Mini. Apple, it was Phil Schiller. He said that the Mac Mini is still, I forgot what the wording was. The implication was that they're not discontinuing the Mac Mini.
Okay, well, update it then,
yeah.
Bro.
Yeah.
Update it. And update it every year.
Update, bro.
Update all of them over year. I want every year, I want new Macs. Not because I want to buy a new Mac every year, but because any year that I buy a new Mac, I do not want to be choosing from years on. I have to choose years old technology. That's why you need to update this stuff every year. It's not for the people who upgraded last year. It's for the people who upgraded 4 years ago and don't want to upgrade to something that is 3 years old.
Yeah, this is
the simple stuff.
This
simple
is part stuff. Of why I waited so long before updating my laptop.
Simple stuff.
Exactly. I was not going to buy another Mac with the same old processor that I already had.
Mm-mm. Mm-mm. Not going to do it.
So that's why I waited.
I'm not going to do it.
And I didn't do it. I went through the pain of using my computer a year longer than I should have. Or, well, talk about...
first world problems.
First world problems, yeah. A year longer than I would have liked for the type of things that I do with my computer. How's that sound?
There you go. All right, so we got a comment on iTunes. We appreciate all comments on iTunes. Go leave us a review on iTunes.
Yes, please.
Go leave us a review. If you hate us, that's fine. As a matter of fact,
I have a hard time imagining anyone hating us. Well, at least.
Yeah. Oh, some people do. Some people don't like us. So, for instance, I'm going to read our brand new review on iTunes.
Okay.
Is that all right? So are you cool with that?
I'm totally cool with that because I'm sure it's all puppy dogs and rainbows and glitter. Yeah, go ahead.
It's from GT Mako, GTMAKO from the US. He goes, and I quote, "This used to be one of the better Apple News podcasts." Actually, I don't really think we're a news podcast, but whatever. "But since the end of 2016, this podcast has become a political tech podcast with only one view. Since it's no longer just a tech podcast, I would not recommend this for anyone that just wants a tech podcast. If you want a political and tech podcast, this might be the podcast for you. That's only if you want the view from the far left. So long, ACM." To which I, first of all, say thank you for the review. And secondly, don't let the door hit you on your way out.
Well, I was going to say thank you for the review. Thanks for listening. And we'll miss you now that you're gone.
Yeah, which is true. And I truly do appreciate the reviews. So here's the deal. You know, when I go shopping, say, for a book on iBooks or a new product that I don't know anything about, or if I'm actually looking between brands for a product on Amazon, I will look for the reviews, and generally speaking, I read a couple of the five star reviews, and then I go looking specifically for the 1-star reviews to see why people have rated it poorly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the reason why is I want to see the thing that they're complaining about. For instance, if there are only a few 1-star reviews and it turns out because the people who left them are idiots, I know that I can disregard them.
Sure.
Or if you like, if you're looking at an app and the 1-star reviews are app is too much, 1-star, and it's $1.99. Or $4.99 or $9.99. I'm going to disregard all those, or because
it's a PDF reader app and it gets a 1-star review because it doesn't play Super Mario World.
right. You know, but the flip side is they become really useful when someone says mine was broken, or mine was broken and then the company wouldn't respond to me, or this app doesn't work under these circumstances, or this book is poorly written as opposed to, you know, like, I don't know, whatever. So I like to read the best and I like to read the worst and get a feel for why people like it and why people hate it. And you know, and because a lot of 5-star reviews are useless too. You know, like some of them are clearly shills.
I don't think we have any shills.
Based on
the fact that we never go out and say, "Hey, here's what I want you to write in a review."
Right. So anyway, this fellow's complaint that we are from the far left and that we are a tech and politics podcast. We're not far left. We're only far left if you're far right, because we are center left. There's the redefinition between what is left wing and what is right wing in the U.S. is really, really weird as the country has shifted sharply to the right.
Boy, howdy. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but whatever, that's fine. If you want to consider us from the far left, that's fine. But here's the deal. Politics and technology go hand in hand increasingly. And this is especially true for a company like Apple that is Apple's size, a company like Apple that is used as a political pawn between countries like Russia and China and the U.S. Mm-hmm. Company whose taxation practices are so closely watched because they're the world's most profitable company. right? A company that is increasingly involved in more product categories and in areas that are increasingly important to our daily life, and therefore run into increasing regulatory scrutiny.
Right. And don't forget privacy and security, which has become a very political or politicized topic.
It has become a very politicized topic because privacy and security does have an adverse effect on law enforcement and national security. It does. Right. You know, we are pro privacy and security.
Definitely.
The more secure our products are, the more privacy we have on our products, the harder it is for law enforcement to do its job, and the harder it is for the national security and intelligence apparatuses to do their job.
Apparatuses or apparati? It's apparatuses. I just wanted to say apparati.
I support this message.
Thank you.
I support this message. So technology and politics intersect, and we will be talking about politics when it intersects what Apple is doing. And there's just no way around that. So we very much appreciate the reviews. We would like you to leave a review, whether or not you hate us, whether or not you love us. Go and leave a review on iTunes, please.
Reviews are great for many reasons. One mm-hmm. being, it's a way for us and you to connect. So we love getting your opinion and your perspective, and reviews are part of that. It's also great because when you're leaving reviews, it makes it easier for other people to decide if this is the show for them or not. You know, just like Brian was saying, he looks at the positive and negative reviews on products on Amazon.
Yeah, and believe it or not, there are people who will be turned off by hearing that we're a quote-unquote far-left tech and politics blog, podcast. And there were people who would be turned on by the idea that we're a quote-unquote far-left tech and politics. Although I'm guessing people that are actually far-left will be greatly disappointed
in
us. They'll
be very disappointed. They'll listen and they'll be like, seriously?
Yeah, you guys are like, capitalist pigs. Yeah. You're capitalist pigs. So, but then the other thing is, I very much encourage everyone not to silo. So I do not limit myself to center left, politics, especially when it comes to technology, because that's actually not even possible. I like to find, opinions, of all spectrums so that I can actually inform better opinions for myself. Mm-hmm. And I encourage that for everybody. Now, the reality is that the internet makes it too easy to silo, and we're not going to solve that here and now. But yeah, there you have it.
Yeah. If you want to have a better understanding of someone else's philosophies, learning a little bit about them, meaning what are they reading? What are they listening to? That really helps, because otherwise you're siloed. Don't be siloed, people.
Yep. That said, I'm really not interested in reading Breitbart. So I guess I'm siloing from, I'm siloing a little bit.
Now, my guess is that if someone told you that there's a Breitbart article that you would find interesting because it'll be very enlightening and will help you get a better understanding of the perspective that some people are having on whatever the topic is, that you might go read that Breitbart article.
Oh, of course.
See? So there's a difference between siloing and not leaning into a curveball.
It's true. But in the meanwhile, as we also see The Republican Party, which has both houses of Congress and the White House, as they seek to enact their own legislative agendas, and particularly in the form of regulation or deregulation, as the case may be, that is going to increasingly encroach on our world. Like the most recent thing, of course, being the fact that the Republican Party signed away our privacy from our ISPs.
Right. And there are some people that are saying, actually, no, they didn't. All they did was create a level playing field. And this is a good place where
a level playing field for corporate surveillance capitalism. That's crap is what that is.
Yeah, it does really suck. I don't like the idea of my ISPs being able to.
Yeah, it's not fair that only some corporations can pillage our lives for their own profit. What would be fair is if all the corporations can do that, especially the corporations that sit in between us and everything on the internet. Yeah, that's completely freaking reasonable.
And see, and this is exactly what you're talking about. People should go and do their own research. Don't be siloed, and then decide if you think that we are totally right to be flipping out and upset about what Congress did, or are we just out of line here?
Right.
I think that it's totally fine for us to be upset about this. I don't like the idea of paying for the privilege of being sold.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Take a deep breath.
Robot welfare. So this is again, we're gonna again channel John Keat.
So, but before we really get into this, I have to tell you, when you brought up this as a potential topic, I was so excited at first, then briefly painfully disappointed, and then totally fine again. And it's because I thought you said robot warfare, and I thought you meant like robot wars where people build their own robots and put them in competitions. And then I realized you meant welfare, and I was picturing robots collecting food stamps, and I was like, why would robots need food stamps? They can't eat. And then I put everything back together, and I was like, hey, yeah, we should talk about this. Anyhow, Brian.
Yeah.
So.
What's up? All right. So John Keat has been saying, John Keat, we're channeling John again. And I'm only mentioning, I'm really keen on giving credit where credit is due. I'm very important to me. And John Keat has been going on for quite a while about how we're all headed for robot welfare along the lines of WALL-E.
Okay. To be fair, that spaceship was pretty sweet.
It was really gross and disgusting, though. You know, speaking of, not at first, politics and technology. That movie is super political. Of course, so was The Incredibles. And like two different ends of the spectrum, I might add. But whatever. I'm sorry. All right, I'm completely digressing. What brings this up this week for this show is Sally, the salad tossing robot.
Wait, the robot's name is actually Sally?
This robot's name is actually Sally. Sally.
And she's a robot that for what, $10,000? $50,000?
Yeah, we say she because she's been given a feminine name.
And she will toss your salad.
She will toss your salad. I am 12. I am 12 years old. But what it is, it's a robot in the same way that coffee vending machines are robots.
Okay.
We don't think of those as robots, but they are. Those are robots.
Yeah, okay. Yep, I'll accept that. And yeah, so I suppose in that sense, it is a robot. But this isn't something that that I would buy and put on my counter, right?
You could if you had 30 grand, but no, this is aimed at small businesses and grocery stores. Really, I kind of think that they're also even aiming it at restaurants with any kind of like a buffet kind of style.
So this goes into, on some level, like food service industry. That's yes. What it's targeting loosely.
Yeah. Yeah, so you would go to the machine and you can pick the ingredients that you want in your salad. You can actually, and it shows you the exact calorie count, which is probably not actually exact, but whatever. And so, you know, you can build your salad according to your calorie goal, or by the, you know, if you're actually more concerned with the ingredients, and it then takes the already prepared ingredients, puts them into a bowl for you, and then gives it to you.
Okay. So in that sense, it's like the restaurants that I go into where they make a salad for you, and you just go down the line, and they keep adding, and then at the end you have this bowl with whatever the salad is, and they hand it to you. But instead of having people do it, it's a robot that's doing it.
And instead of having a human preparer, a human preparer or a chef is still going to have chopped up the lettuce and chopped up the carrots and grated the cheese and whatever. Right.
Grated the cheese.
Yeah. Those of us who are not.
Oh, that's right. I forgot. The cheese. That's just so weird. I mean, it's you might as well be saying, and then they put the shoes on the salad. And we eat it.
So if you weird. Ate your, if regular people ate shoes, then yes, you would have a point. But so this is, so without the food services person putting it together for you, or better yet, without the jackanape in front of you, who's picking his nose and then grazing as he goes, without him getting his grubby mitts in your food too.
Oh. Okay, so I don't go to those kind of salad places.
I don't either, but they exist.
I know, and
you know, or the kid who like shoves his hands into the olives, right? I mean, you know, and that happens. That sort of thing happens, and so this basically limits the human contact with the food to the person that actually loaded it up.
All right.
But the fact that you get to choose exactly what you want in it, you know, from a display, a menu on a display, and you get to see the exact, or the, you know, which is not really exact calorie count, but it's probably way closer than anything else we have like that, and it's all being done automatically, and it's $30,000. So this is, you know, they're wanting to make it cheaper, and they're wanting to make it smaller. And I mean, why anyone? No one's gonna. Well, you wouldn't want this in your house. Well, you're not gonna load up a robot like this with a bunch of salads.
I go to a restaurant down the street, and when I go to the salad bar, instead of just I guess I do use sometimes go to places where you actually make your own salad, but. Yeah, I could see where this replacing the salad bar at a local restaurant would be a really cool thing, because now you're taking out all of those grossities that you just described to me. Okay, I think this is actually a good idea now that you've talked me through it.
Well, okay, and that's fine. But here's the more interesting thing. This is just a step. This is a stepping stone towards that robot welfare future. You know, we have the robots now that'll cook your burgers for a restaurant. Mm-hmm. They can eliminate a line cook. And don't get me wrong, I'm not happy about people being thrown out of work. I remember you of course remember Kyle Daddario.
Oh yes, okay, yes.
Right, you replaced Kyle Daddario when Kyle went to go work for as one of the first geniuses at the Apple Store.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right. Kyle used to work for us. He was,
I'm sorry Kyle's gone, but I'm also glad at the same time because I'm here.
Fair enough. And I'm happy to have you, but I very much miss Kyle too. I love Kyle. I love Kyle. I respect him. I admire him. He's the bee's knees. Kyle and I got into an argument after Macworld, when Macworld was still in New York.
Uh-huh.
We were driving up to his place. I was spending the week with him after Macworld, up in his home near, I think it was in Troy.
Okay.
Near Buff, whatever.
You're in New York. Maybe.
Yeah, I'm in New York, and we're driving through. And I noticed that the toll booths for all the toll roads that we were on were manned by people. And I commented, like, wow, that's really weird that they have people. And he's like, well, you know, what else are they going to do? I said, well, you know, down in Texas, where around Houston, where all these toll roads at that time that were being newly implemented, that they were mostly automated. So you actually would, and this was before you had the various sensors, where, you know, that would automatically just tag you as you walk, as you drove through.
Yeah, I have one of those in my car.
Mm-hmm. Right. So there would be these baskets, and, you know, people would drive with buckets full of change, and they would drive through, and they would throw a handful of change into these machines that would quickly count it and sort it, and off you go. Mm-hmm. That was a stepping stone, because now, of course, we have these systems where people get these automated radio controlled identifiers,
right,
where you can be tracked, and that's really awesome. And so we got into an argument, Kyle and I, about how it's important to put people to work, and that there were lots and lots of people who worked these toll booths. And I was saying, yeah, but it's essentially a tax on productivity, because these folks aren't actually contributing anything. Yes, they have a job, and yes, it's important for people to have jobs, but in this particular case, the job actually isn't giving back anything. No one's making anything. They're not even making the transaction pleasant more often than not.
Mm-hmm.
He was very angry at me that I would want to put people out of work. And I was very angry at him that he wanted us to be paying for jobs that don't actually do anything. And it was an interesting philosophical debate. And this is the debate we're going to increasingly have as robot technologies accelerate. Like, for instance, eliminating line cooks, which restaurants would love to do.
Sure. Of course. I mean, man, the restaurant industry, I have friends that work in restaurants, and listening to them talk about the daily drama of getting people to show up regularly just for the job.
Yeah, of course.
They would love to be able to avoid that.
Right. And part of that is the fact that we have a dysfunctional relationship. We want cheap things. We don't want to pay for anything.
Yeah.
You know, we want our fast food to be as cheap as possible, which coincidentally means that people have to be paid as little as possible.
Right.
Right. And so, you know, we have this dysfunctional relationship with what we're willing to pay and the practical effects therein that result from that. And employees are one of those things. So, you know, increasingly here in Silicon Valley, you've got cashiers, but then you also have self-checkout where you can go through and check out yourself, mm-hmm. right? Yep. You just scan your stuff. Are they doing that in Boulder yet?
Oh, yeah. You can do that. That's a thing. I actually saw it first in Alaska long time ago. But yeah, the self-checkouts in Colorado in stores, that's something that's been here for a long time.
Right. And it's permeating around the world. And those are people, of course, those are jobs that were once occupied by people.
Yeah. And I remember back in the days when I worked in a grocery store. You knew that, right?
No, I didn't. It's another career that Jeff Gammon has had.
So when I worked in a grocery store there, the union was really fighting having those self-checkout terminals brought in.
Yeah, sure. Sure.
And their argument was you need to be highly trained to know how to use these things. And you don't want to put all these people out of work because that's exactly what's going to happen once you let the customers ring stuff up and everything's going to get stolen. Well, it turns out that's not true across the board. Pretty much anyone can drag a barcode across the scanner. And
to their point, though, I did witness once a guy stealing bottles of wine.
Theft is always going to happen. It doesn't matter right if you have a self-checkout or not. It's just going to
right
happen.
In front of two managers who were not doing their job, I might add.
Yeah. Well, see, and that's a management problem.
Absolutely.
When I worked in the grocery store, if someone tried to shoplift, it did not go well for them.
Sure.
But
No doubt.
The point is that no one lost jobs. The shoplifting rate did not go up.
There are fewer people doing checkout.
Jobs have been lost
from those.
No, those people transitioned into different jobs. So that specific position.
Yeah, well, then that means they weren't creating new. Fewer people are being hired as a result of the self-checkout stands that are in many grocery stores today.
I don't think so. I think that people are being hired for different jobs.
No way. They're not going to create new jobs. They're going to eliminate whatever position they can.
Some of those
money,
people,
baby.
Okay, so here's another thing that happened, and the union hated it, and it was that the product vendors got to start stocking their own shelves. And the employees said, well, we're going to lose our jobs. Now, many people that were hired to stock shelves in the stores went to work for the companies that came in and then stocked the shelves. So their job shifted somewhere else. And that's what I saw with the checkers also. It's the jobs shifted somewhere else. I know that's not true across the board, but my point is when an automation system takes over one job, it doesn't necessarily mean that people are out of work.
Yeah, I'd say you're largely delusional there. I think that the goal of capital is to reduce the amount of people that they're paying.
And those people probably aren't there at those companies anymore. Meaning if you automate a system in such a way where your objective is to not have humans involved, eventually you don't have humans involved. But in many cases, the fact that this new system has been created that eliminates a job in one place can create a job somewhere else. It's not universal. And yes, I know that some people are just flat out of work, and that really sucks. But not everyone ends up out of work.
There are people still working, and we've created, you know, productivity per worker has been vastly increasing in the United States in particular. Mm-hmm. Wages have not increased. Productivity is going up and wages have not gone up. Part of that is because we have more and more stuff that's being automated. And of course, part of it is the power of computers and a bunch of other things. One reason why wages haven't been going up is because employment itself, there's no pricing pressure on employment because the number of jobs is not keeping up with that productivity either. That's and a lot of that is because of increasing automation. So and I mean, I don't think that we are headed towards. I actually disagree with my buddy John Keat on the idea that we're headed towards an era of robot welfare. I do think that we've been facing this problem since automated looms started replacing weavers. Mm-hmm. Resulting in the birth of the Luddite movement. for centuries we've been facing this idea, and it turns out people are still working, and I think that we're probably going to continue that. And if anything, I think we're going to continue to have more and more. Like John Martellaro wrote a piece for us about how AIs could replace authors, and I don't think that's going to happen either.
It already has happened in specific scenarios.
Yeah, but it's not going
to. Not going to be across the board.
Right. It has it, especially in the reporting business. But there are still. I mean, like there's still going to be a role for humans in journalism. There's still going to be a role of for humans in creating fiction. There is still. I mean, it's. We're just going to keep, unless civilization ends, which is increasingly likely, we're going to adapt to these changes in technology and these changes in automation. And and if we do it right, we will find ever more intellectual jobs for people to do.
You know, back when I worked in the printing industry, you knew that was one of my careers. When I got into the printing industry, it was in the transition after typesetting was gone, but before stripping had really gone away. But it was definitely going away. And the old timers, they were certain that desktop publishing was going to screw everyone over, and no one was going to have jobs because it was just the computer things doing their thing. Well, and it turns out, no, a lot of those typesetters learned how to use PageMaker and Photoshop and Illustrator. And
if anything, more people got involved in that industry.
Yeah.
Because of desktop publishing.
Yeah. In the end, it created a whole new booming industry that was accessible to far more than it had been before. And
things like our church newsletters got less ugly. Well, right. Some of them did. Most of them did. Most of them did. And things like handouts at school became not mimeographed.
Oh, right. Oh man, do you remember mimeograph smell?
Yes, I remember. Yes, it's yes. Right. I mean, like there are so many. I mean, there's ugly sides of design of everybody, of the barrier to entry of doing design work being lowered. Right. I mean, there were ugly sides of that, too. But by and large, we've had this massive improvement of things like newsletters, emails, family newsletters, company newsletters, self-published books. Mm-hmm. Web pages. I mean, like, there are some ugly web pages out there, but you know what? We don't have GeoCities anymore.
No, we don't.
So, I mean, it's
You're right. Anyone essentially can create a professional printed product now. It's mm-hmm. I mean, people take for granted having a color printer in their home, a color inkjet.
Yeah,
I have a color laser printer set up in my office, and that's totally affordable for so many people. I mean, really, the printer, it didn't cost that much money even when I bought it new all those years ago. And the point is, I can print out something that looks like it came off of a press right here in my office.
Yeah.
It's empowering.
It is empowering, and there are fewer like. Oh goodness, I'm forgetting the name. What do you call a print shop? The people that used to there's a terminology for the kind of company whose job was to take your work and print it.
You mean like a service bureau?
Service bureau, yeah. Service bureaus are mostly gone, and that actually means some high paying jobs went away too. Mm-hmm. But there have been all these opportunities created by anybody being able to do this, almost anybody being able to do this.
Yeah,
I mean, all kinds of opportunities presented along those lines. So I don't know, there's good and there's bad.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't expect a robot is going to put either one of us out of business for a long time.
No, probably not.
No.
Probably not. And in the meanwhile, we are out of time. I'd like to encourage everybody to go and leave a review of this here podcast on iTunes. I don't care if you love us. I don't care if you hate us. Tell people what you think and why you think it.
Yeah, and what I want you to do is tell Brian that his microphone sounds like crap. Because
does it?
Yeah, you just switched to a different microphone. So everyone, tell Brian his microphone sounds like crap. It'll be funny. He'll like that a lot. Well, while Brian sits there and fiddles with that, I'm going to push the button that makes music happen. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And hey, thanks for listening and making fun of Brian's microphone.
Yeah, well, my microphone is back, but our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. I apologize for that. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for Timo, and that's all for this week.
And hey, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.